It's 7:43 on this West Virginia morning. I'm Teresa Wills. This morning, we explore what the state and region would have looked like 20,000 years ago during the last ice age.
You would have seen big, giant sloth, beaver the size of a black bear, had these great, big, wonderful predators that fed on these big animals, a dire wolf.
That story in just a moment. This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. Studies have shown that processed sugar is bad for us, and it can be particularly toxic for kids. We also know that the consumption of breakfast affects a child's learning ability and behavior. But the federal nutritional standards for school meals don't regulate sugar consumption. That means some elementary school students in West Virginia are eating a lot of sugar for breakfast. As part of a youth reporting project, Fayette Institute of Technology High School seniors Tabitha Gill and Katie Cameron take us to Valley Elementary School to examine one health educator's efforts to change that.
At Valley Elementary School, the kids are eating breakfast.
Do you want to tell them what's for breakfast?
Sausage and French toast.
Is it good?
Yeah.
So they do have a protein today, which is sausage.
Mm-hmm.
Not all days do they get it, but I'm happy to see that.
Katie Johnson is the health educator for several Fayette County schools. She says one of her goals is to have quality protein at every breakfast because protein slows down how quickly your body absorbs sugar.
My long-term goal in the elementary school is to have all fresh food, either made from scratch or fresh fruits and vegetables, and then maybe eggs and sausage.
Part of the problem is that some schools in Fayette County share kitchens. And the pre-prepared foods, considered a protein in school breakfasts, such as yogurt, can have a lot of sugar in them. Trix yogurt, for instance, one of the breakfast items served, has 14 grams of sugar per serving, or about half of the daily amount of sugar the American Heart Association recommends for kids under the age of 18.
The elementary kids at one of the schools I'm at are getting about 52 grams of sugar a day. And that's about 3 days a week. 2 days a week, the cooks do bring over a hot meal. So it's about 3 days a week that they're getting that much sugar.
Meaning the meal is cooked at a school with a kitchen and then taken to Valley Elementary.
Eating breakfast in the morning has a positive impact on children's behavior and academic performance, according to a 2013 article published in the Frontiers of Human Neuroscience. But we also know that eating lots of added sugar leads to tooth decay and is related to developing diabetes, obesity, and high blood pressure later in life.
Hey, do you guys usually like your breakfast here?
Yeah.
I'm gonna get their cinnamon rolls.
Cinnamon rolls? It's a lot of sweet stuff you guys like.
Yet federal regulations for school breakfast don't mention sugar.
Christy Blower is the state coordinator of the West Virginia Office of Child Nutrition.
So for breakfast, you have to have three different components and four items out of those components. Those are a grain bread component, a fruit or vegetable, which most of the time is fruit for breakfast, and milk, which has to be 1% or fat-free.
Joseph Dooley is the Fayette County Nutrition Director. He says that all Fayette County schools comply with those regulations and serve the lowest amount of sugar recommended. But for him, sugar isn't as big of a deal as fat, sodium, and calories.
The bigger issue, he says, is that providing healthier food options doesn't mean kids will actually eat them.
To change all that they have known their whole entire life, and all of a sudden you say, these are better options, and when they taste it, it may not taste the same as what they kind of liked a little while for that child to acquire that taste and that desire to choose a better item.
Valley Elementary School cook Kelsey Critchley also has her doubts.
They don't even eat the corn we put on their tray, so I don't think they're going to eat very much of it.
But some counties, like Cabell, are moving toward an initiative called From Scratch Cooking.
Cabell County Nutrition Director Rhonda McCoy says that when they first started, they did struggle with kids accepting the new menus.
We did go through that at one point in time, and then as we continued to stick to the course of preparing our meals from scratch, students began accepting the food.
State Coordinator Blower is the coordinator for the From Scratch initiative. She says the state is encouraging all schools to make their meals from scratch.
West Virginia actually is really innovative compared to a lot of other states when it comes to being out there serving from scratch meals, serving healthy meals, being lower in sodium and lower in fat.
The idea is to train cooks from around the state to create healthy meals with recipes that follow USDA standards. Cabell County's McCoy again.
I feel like scratch cooking has made it more nutritious for our school meals because we know what is in our products. And I just think that with that type of information available, that it allows us to serve as healthy school meals as possible for our students.
Johnson says she hopes the From Scratch initiative becomes Fayette County's normal routine as well. But in order for Fayette County to adopt all from scratch cooking, she says the mindset about food needs to change.
And starting that change may begin with getting back to the basics.
I think one of the best things that we can do is to start gardening at school. And we have a small garden at school, and the kids love to work on it. And it's happening across the country, and there's some good models that we can use so the kids can really relate to where their food comes from.
And as kids become familiar with where their food comes from, she says she hopes that eating healthy, including eating less sugar throughout the day, will become the new norm. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting,
I'm Tabitha Gill.
And I'm Katie Cameron in HICO, West Virginia.
That was high school seniors Tabitha Gill and Katie Cameron, who were part of a youth reporting project between the Fayette Institute of Technology and Appalachia Health News. Appalachia Health News is a project of West Virginia Public Broadcasting with support from Marshall Health, Charleston Area Medical Center, and WVU Medicine. This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. It's 7:51. Areas of patchy light rain or freezing drizzle this morning, becoming mostly cloudy skies with highs in the 40s and low 50s. A chance of rain or snow tonight with lows in the 30s. Chance of rain or snow tomorrow with partial clearing later in the day with highs in the 30s and low 40s. Support for West Virginia Public Broadcasting is provided by Orion Strategies, Professional Public Relations, Government Affairs, Creative Services, and Research and Polling, with offices in Charleston, Buchanan, Martinsburg, Pittsburgh, and Columbus. Our Wild Wondering West Virginia campaign to answer questions about the Mountain State led us to a question from Nancy Taylor. She wanted to know what the state was like during the last ice age. Environmental reporters Brittany Patterson and Glynis Board were really excited about exploring this idea. Research led them to a unique place in the state, which is a remnant of the Ice Age, Cranesville Swamp. They went to experience it for themselves and brought back this report.
Cranesville Swamp is not actually a swamp. It's actually one of the few remaining boreal peat high mountain bogs in the southern United States. Okay, so we're basically coming out of the forest and it leads out into what you would think kind of looks like a meadow. Here's the boardwalk.
You need waders at least to stomp through the deep wet marsh. The boardwalk allows easy passage. We came to this 1,600-acre nature preserve in Preston County because naturalists like Rodney Barges say this place isn't too different from what much of West Virginia looked like at the end of the last ice age.
And when you look out across the open bog, you got to remember that it had been over, you know, hundreds of thousands of acres instead of a few open acres here and there like you would now see at Cranesville.
It's very open and flat, and these yellow grasses are sort of interspersed with this deep red grass.
This particular bog area probably formed like 10,000 years ago.
The unique geology, elevation, plants, and water here today create a microclimate that has sustained this Ice Age era environment.
To be clear, the Ice Age lasted a really long time, like 2.5 million years. But there were a lot of mini ice ages during that time. Cranesville formed during the last one.
Glaciers never quite reached West Virginia in that time, but they got close. Parts of the state would have been covered in tundra or perpetually frozen, according to West Virginia University Associate Geology and Geography Professor Steve Kite.
At lower elevations, almost all the forest was likely to have been a boreal forest with a lot of conifers, spruce and fir, and a few birches and other hardwood trees, but it was be a forest that looked much more like what you'd see in Quebec today.
When the glaciers started to recede, everything changed. The ice carved out the Great Lakes, and as the area warmed, the melting landscape in West Virginia basically came unglued.
Towns like Moundsville and Weirton, they're in valleys that were carved and left behind as the drainage changed.
Kite explains the glacier created a lake that covered much of the Upper Ohio Valley, including northern West Virginia, beginning about 900,000 years ago. He says the clay left behind shaped the livelihoods of people today.
If the Lake Monongahela clays would not have been here, then there would not have been the resource to easily make pottery from, both for prehistory for Native Americans, but also in early history. Then who knows if the glass industry, would have taken off quite as quickly.
Back out in the bog, we really wanted to find this one rare tree called an American larch, or tamarack.
Oh, I found it! I found it! That's got to be it, right?
Yeah.
That's got to be it.
So what makes the tamarack special?
Well, it's a weird conifer that drops its needles every fall. It's deciduous conifer, and it only grows in northern climates. Tamarack populations have not been found in most of Maryland and West Virginia since the last ice age. It's a relic. So yeah, 10,000 years ago, you still would have seen that tree here. There wouldn't have been the power lines behind it, but you could almost imagine like a
Mastodon. Saber-toothed tiger.
Wow, really?
Yeah.
They were here?
Yeah.
Wow. Naturalist Bartkus says West Virginia would have been teeming with otherworldly creatures.
You would have seen big, giant sloths, beaver the size of a black bear, had these great, big, wonderful predators that fed on these big animals, a dire wolf, which is a larger wolf than is found today. We had short-faced bear, which is the biggest bear that's ever been known to live in North America. So it would have been quite a sight to see.
So the Cranesville Swamp is no longer home to mastodon or giant sloth. Today, it's fox, bear, and raccoons. Cranesville and other places in the state like Dolly Sods or the Cranberry Wilderness are still great places to visit if you want to glimpse what living in the Ice Age might have felt like. But really, its fingerprints are all around, and perhaps even embedded inside us. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Brittany Patterson.
And I'm Glynis Board.
West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from West Virginia University, Concord University, and Shepherd University. Our producer is Glynis Board. I'm Teresa Wills.